Super Barn Podcast. I'm Benjamin Scott, and I'm once again joined by Garrett Kerber.
Hey.
Tim Richards.
Hello.
And Sebastian Zimmerman.
Hi.
Today we will be discussing Bayern's recent press conference in which Uli Hoeneß and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge opened war with the German media. We'll attempt to determine what exactly Bayern's best midfield trio is, and we'll ask whether or not Bayern have broken out of their recent slump after a 3-1 win over Wolfsburg, which is actually where I want to begin. Garrett, what did you make of that win?
For me, something that kind of now occurred to me is that it was good to see Bayern play a little bit more solid defensively, and I think it was kind of a 4-1-4-1 sort of formation they lined up in, and having Javi Martinez back there in a much more defensive role kind of shored things up, and Niklas Süle was fantastic all game, I felt like. So I think that was definitely one of those things that, you know, you come away and you say, okay, the worm's sort of starting to turn, so to speak. You're starting to see a better defensive Bayern. I think that having James in more central role is where he should be from here on out. I would guess that they're going to try him on the wings and whatnot, just because that's how things work. But I thought having him central and being able to kind of create out of the middle more allowed Bayern to do a lot more things, and that defense, which has kind of been, I felt like, the issue coming into the match. It was good to see them kind of focus a little bit more there in this match.
So, I completely agree. I completely agree concerning Süle and James, by the way. I wanted to answer something that Tim has brought up here. I think the whole thing about this little crisis, mini crisis, whatever you're going to call it, is it's really two different crises, if you want to put it like that. I mean, there is this crisis of losing some games, but it was also a glimpse into what could happen if a lot of people get injured in the end and we don't know where to go. So I think for most fans, it's not this one crisis, having lost a couple of games. It's having lost a couple of games and also seeing what can happen with a lot of injuries and no clear plan. And maybe Kovac is not ready for all this. Maybe he's not the guy to lead us to Champions League, to success in the Champions League. So I guess that's why it feels kind of strange here, because, yeah, there are two things in my mind, and I think it's the same way for a lot of fans at the moment, that yeah, of course, it was not the end of the world losing those games. I mean, I think we are now four points behind Borussia Dortmund, so yeah, that's actually really not the end of the world. But it felt a lot like a kind of situation where we could, if something like this happens again down the stretch, that's a way how our season can go completely wrong, and I think that was felt, at least I felt it, and I think that's the real crisis we were seeing there, so that's why I think this is so strange here.
Yeah, well, when you're at a club like Bayern Munich, I guess crisis kind of takes on a new definition, whereas another club would kind of view this as the brink of a crisis, kind of like you hinted at. You know, this could be, you know, foreshadowing maybe worse events in the future for Bayern. That's, you know, that stuff like that rarely happens, if ever. And so when there's even a glimpse of things starting to go wrong, it's, you know, labeled a crisis. It's, you know, things are as bad as they can get.
Yeah, it's the curse of a club where everything typically goes brilliantly for them. Like, if something isn't quite 100%, even if it's, right, it wasn't 90%, but even if something's just a little bit off, you think, this club is going to free fall. They're going to get relegated. Everybody's going to leave. Like, just the slightest problem is suddenly just amplified.
Something I want to address real quick. I want to talk about, what did you guys make of Robert Lewandowski and his game? Because I know Lewandowski, of all the players at Bayern Munich, is perhaps the easiest to be put under the microscope, the easiest, the first for many people to criticize, just because of, you know, it's no secret that most of what he does is for himself. It's for his own personal career. But yesterday, he played like the best striker in the world, and he played like a player who was wanting the team to win more so than just himself. I thought his build-up play and his link-up play, especially on James' goal to end it off, I thought it was all pretty good. I thought it was, really good for someone who's kind of, Bayern kind of goes as Lewandowski goes in recent seasons. If he's scoring, Bayern are good. If he's looking bad, Bayern are looking pretty bad. So what did you guys make of yesterday's game from him?
So I think after his first goal, for me, what was so interesting was the celebration afterwards, kind of like what you said, a player, he's a player that seems to be concerned about his role and what he does, and a little bit less about the team. Not to say he's not a team player, but it seems like the team is a little bit more secondary to his career. But after that first goal, the way that he tried to, pump his fist and yell and do all it was different than just your typical like, oh, I scored and I'm feeling it now. It seemed more like it was like, come on, here we go, let's get this back. It seemed a little bit more forced. And in a normal situation, I feel like that would be a bad thing to have a forced celebration. But like in this situation, with all that's going on around Bayern Munich, it felt like it was kind of a rah-rah moment. Like, hey, even if we're not feeling, at the top of our game, let's go. And so I like that from a intangible standpoint. But I felt like a couple of it, maybe not the first goal, one of the goals at least was a little bit more on. I felt like the keeper should have made a play there, but honestly, if Lewandowski's scoring, however that starts happening, it doesn't really matter. If he could have, just kind of been there for a tap in, and that would have been great for Bayern going forward, because like you said, as he goes, Bayern seems to go, and as of right now, that's what this team needs.
Well, it's interesting. You can make yourself seem good or bad on social media. You can put out a lot of things that may or may not be true. But he tweeted after the match and he said, "I would like to dedicate this victory to our fans supporting us during the good and bad moments." # Mia San Mia. Usually, you don't see stuff like this from him, especially in seasons past when maybe he was kind of angling for a move to Real Madrid or stuff like that. He's not calling out the fans for their great support and stuff like that. So I thought that was neat. Thought it was nice to see from someone that you're expecting to score, 30 plus goals a season.
I saw that tweet too. Do we want to start?
No, Ben, you go ahead.
Yeah, I saw that tweet too. I think, was it today or was it yesterday? I don't know. I saw it too. And I guess I have to preface this a little bit. I have been against getting Lewandowski to Bayern from the very beginning. I'm on the record for being completely against getting the guy, even if it did not cost as much. And yeah, I didn't like it from the start, and I haven't grown to like it at all. Really, I won't suddenly enjoy him being in a Bayern uniform. But yeah, I think my real question here is how long is this going to last? Because I don't know where it's coming from. Maybe Kovac is doing something here. If it's Kovac's thing, I would be enthusiastic. I mean, he's working wonders if that's his doing, but I don't really think so. I would expect that this is going away pretty soon, and we're back to normal. He's doing his thing. I cannot really imagine this going any other way, I must say. But yeah, I guess it has worked out with him at FC Bayern. So yeah, it can work out again, I would say. But I don't expect him to become a team player suddenly. I don't know. Things would really have to change for that to happen, I guess. So, yeah.
I completely agree. I've been very vocal in my, I guess, in my support of Mario Mandzukic. I feel like he was robbed out of his position. I really like Mario Mandzukic. I thought he was the exact sort of player that Bayern have needed in the past. And kind of with that, there's the, like, the breaking off point of Lewandowski is a very glamorous player. And when he's on, he's great. So yesterday's performance was very, very rare. I think everything that we've seen of Lewandowski in the past 2 days, I think it's been something that we just don't really see. Somebody that's coming back to help out in midfield, like really getting stuck in, looking for a, like looking to battle for every single ball, working with players around him, and then saying, I'd like to thank the fans. I honestly cannot remember any other time that I've ever seen him do anything like that. Not to say that everybody else in the team does it. Quite a few people do. Like, I know people like Thiago and Alaba and Müller, they always say, oh, thank you for your support. And like that's really great. But yesterday was very peculiar. This was the Robert Lewandowski that I've wanted to see for a very long time. And something that I think has really become quite apparent is that if Lewandowski is angry on the pitch, he's unplayable. Every single team that is put in front of him is just doomed from the start. So you see it against Frankfurt in the Super Cup, where you had, is it David Abraham, I think, who's just constantly like pushing him and kicking him and like knocking him down. What happens? Lewandowski gets a hat trick and was like fighting for every single ball and was working with the team. It's not something that happens as often as it should do. Sebastian, I think you're right. This should be something that we see more often, but how long it's going to last for, that's a question that needs to be addressed, hopefully forever. And if this is a matter of Kovac saying, look, you need to work with people around you, like, I don't know, maybe be more like Mandzukic. Like, I feel like Lewandowski's not going to be happy with that. but ultimately, you've got to respect the manager's decision. Because I know, like, at the beginning of the season, there were reports of Kovac talking to Lewandowski and saying, we need you at this club. Like, we want you to stay. You're one of the most important people that we have, blah, blah, blah. So there is every possibility that this is coming from Kovac. But yeah, this is a very unfamiliar feeling, but one that I would gladly get used to. Because he doesn't, in my mind, he doesn't have to score goals to be a good player. Okay, you have to score goals to be a good striker, but to be a good player, I think that's the most important thing. If you can play well, that's really all I want to see as a fan. I want to see everybody, I just want to see people having a good time and just enjoying themselves. So I'd like to see this stay for a long time.
I mean, no matter what we think about Lewandowski, I would really like to see more changing of places in the offense. I liked it when Müller more often got into the middle and a bit to the back and a bit to the left and a bit to the right. But this is not happening as much as it used to be. I would really like to see more of that. And this is also, I think this is linked with what we have been talking about here. The whole to score the goals should not be on Lewandowski alone. I think that there should be more creativity and more exchange front. I would really enjoy that.
Yeah, Tim, you talked about, you kind of hinted on Lewandowski being an attitude player, or basically saying, you know, when he's angry, when he's playing with that fire, he's pretty much unplayable. And this is also something that we kind of talk about with Thiago a lot, where that's, or at least that's an idea that you really pushed for. You brought it up last time. The whole idea that you can watch Thiago's first 10 minutes, first couple touches even, and based on what happens there, you can kind of tell how the rest of the match is going to go. Whether that's because the match affects him or that's just how he's going to play that day. I think with Lewandowski, you kind of have the same thing. I think if you watch him early on, if he's getting chances, if probably the most importantly, if he's getting the ball, because we know how important that is for him, if he's getting those touches, then, you know, it's going to be a good game. Usually, if he scores early, you can expect more to come, which is what happened against Wolfsburg. So yesterday we saw that happen, and after he got that first goal, he was visibly fired up. He wanted more. He was hungry. He he was attacking, but he was also dropping back. He was doing what he could to help the team. But to give a bit of a defense of him, I'm by no means, you know, he's not my favorite player, but I think it's a bit, maybe a bit silly to say that you got a striker that's worth over 100 million euros for free and to not, you know, at least be grateful for that, or at least be happy that Bayern got him, or to not support him. Like I said, I'm not the biggest fan of his attitude all the time or anything like that, but he's scoring 30 plus goals a season, you know, 30 in the Bundesliga, winning top scorer. You know, he may not always support his teammate, but what more do you want from him on the pitch, I guess, is what I would say.
Yeah, it's I think you're right. The fact that he came to Bayern for free is, I know that I overlook that quite a lot. But obviously he came in and was instantly one of the top paid players. So in that respect, like, free isn't free. But yeah, he would have gone for, I don't know, like 40, 50 million euros at that point, probably even more. So the fact that he came for nothing, like an initial fee of nothing, is always welcome. Like, that is probably buying business at its very best. But I do think that you, just because you don't have a price tag doesn't mean that you don't have to justify not having one. Like, for me, it is a matter of, if you want to be the very best striker in the world, you need to play every single game as if you are the best striker in the world. You can't have games like against Ajax where you make 8 passes, or like, I can't remember how many it was, like 9, 10 passes. Like, if you want to be the best, you have to get involved. It's something that Mandzukic did. And Mandzukic never said, I'm the best striker in the world, like, I'm the best striker in the Bundesliga. He just got on with it. For me, that's like the biggest difference between the two players. Somebody that came in for relatively small amount of money, but just showed up and did the work, compared to somebody that came in for free and often plays like it's free.
Fair enough.
So that is really just what I want from a striker, having seen what you can have. But yeah, very grateful, very inexpensive, so can't complain too much.
So I guess I'll be the resident Lewandowski fan.
Boo.
To me, I think that the best thing that could happen for Lewandowski is keeping James central, providing him that sort of creativity behind him to get him the ball in the places that he needs. I think that partnership could end up being phenomenal for Bayern. I think what actually, what could be helping Lewandowski's attitude is the fact that Real Madrid's having their own issues at the moment, and so maybe
it's a bullet that he's dodged.
And so maybe he's looking, you know, and saying, well, you know, we're in a middle of a crisis now, quote unquote. Keep having to preface with that, but now, you know, he's had this whole summer of being looked at as, oh, this selfish player that he's not worth the money he wants. He's trying to get out of Bayern and all these things. And now he has a chance to show up and say, okay, we're having issues here, and I'm going to be the guy to be the speak up and really try to change the perception. Because I do think he wants to be at Bayern. I think that he, obviously, during the summer and even during the spring, he was looking for greener pastures. But I think that could have been a function of just the year that they had last year with Ancelotti and Heynckes. Just so much going on there. I think that this is more of the type of player that Lewandowski can be and will be when you can. I mean, he always plays well against Wolfsburg. That we've seen that, but I really do think that a partnership with him and James, who have both been kind of vocally disgruntled employees of FC Bayern, they can kind of join forces here and really start to make Bayern into the type of team that's dangerous in every competition they go into.
I find it interesting that you come up with excuses for Lewandowski here, for looking for other nice clubs where he could play, because that hasn't only happened last summer. That has happened twice a year for years now, hasn't it? I mean, that's what it felt to me.
Even back at Dortmund, he was looking to leave.
Yeah, it has always been the same. Probably that was the same when he was still in Poland. we just didn't watch Polish football, so we don't know.
How do you get more money?
Exactly.
How do you get more money?
Exactly.
I mean, I don't. I really do think that, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, you have rumors of him leaving Real Madrid for what, 4 or 5 years. I mean, yeah, since he got there, I just think that that's a function of having a world class striker. There just aren't that many of them.
If I can,
yeah, but I think it has been worse.
If I can kind of serve as a mediator, I guess I do kind of see both sides of this, and I've talked to Tim about this before on our Slack channel and stuff, but for Lewandowski, he's not quite like most players, or I guess he's not the typical ideal player from a fan's point of view. Specifically, or especially, I guess, at a club like Bayern Munich that is so Mia San Mia, so traditional-centric. You want a player like Thomas Müller, who he gives everything to the club. He lives, breathes, eats, drinks, sleeps Bayern. Everything about him is literally Bayern. And he wouldn't, you know, he could take a massive pay raise at Manchester United if he wanted to, for example. We know that they've been after him for a long time, or at least they were after him for a long time. And it never even seemed like he thought about it. He never even considered leaving. That's a very ideal player from a fan's perspective, at least off the pitch. Robert Lewandowski is not that guy. For him, he is very professional in the way he conducts himself, but he sees himself, you know, he's in soccer, football, because that's his career. That's how he makes money, as Garrett said. And, you know, whether as a fan we like it or not, if he can go somewhere else...
But yeah, you can't fault that. He's a professional.
If he
has to do.
If he can go somewhere else, make more money, and on top of that, win more trophies. Because, you know, even if it's at some massive club like Real Madrid who are winning it year after year, there's, you know, putting your name on that Champions League trophy, having your name in those record books, it means something to a player like him. And so I would like to see him more like a Thomas Müller, like someone who is saying, you know, I'm all Bayern, I'm fully committed, this is what I'm here for, which is why I brought it up, because that's what I think, at least what we're seeing, whether or not that's how he feels or not, I think that's what we're seeing from Lewandowski, and I think he deserves maybe a little bit more credit, thanking the fans, actually looking like he's playing for the team this season. So that's just where I'm coming from. I see both sides, but I do think you should cut him some slack.
You're just going to have a hard time finding a Thomas Müller type player that, unless they're German. I really do. I just think that here's a guy who probably didn't, I don't know who he grew up supporting, and so that changes things. I think that like a Thomas Müller or Bastian Schweinsteiger, or I mean, these are Germans that have come up. I mean, they've been fans of, you know, German football and all these. And I think that for Lewandowski, it's just, where can I find the most prestige and ultimately the most cash? I think that that sounds really bad, I think, to a lot of people, but I think it is true. I mean, you're making a living.
I think the question for me is, how are you going to win the Champions League as Bayern Munich? I think you want to be some kind of a special thing. You want to be Mia San Mia. You want to be. I mean, you're not going to win by having the most expensive squad there is in the world. I mean, you can be close, but you need to be. I mean, you need to have an argument for how am I going to beat all those other teams who also have very expensive, very good players. And so I think you need that kind of team spirit and that kind of Mia San Mia element if you really want to win big as Bayern Munich. So I think Bayern could afford to buy a new striker for 50 or now 100 million, a million. That, I think that's fine. That's not going to make or break Bayern Munich. But what's going to make or break Bayern Munich is losing that spirit, losing that Mia San Mia and that mentality. I think that that's way more important here.
Because you can see that spirit in players that aren't Thomas Müller, like players that aren't from Munich. So there's that really fantastic image of Thiago scoring against Juventus, and you can see that goal is, it's not like, oh wow, Thiago scored. It's like, oh wow, Bayern scored. Like, it isn't such a personal thing for him, and which is incredible considering he came from Barcelona, where it is so strong on this is our identity, this is who we are. I don't know, it really depends entirely on like what the match is and things like that. But an example that I always go back to, because I am so staunchly against Robert Lewandowski, but I agree, Benjamin, like we should always just appreciate the fact that we do have somebody that can turn it on. In 2017, I think, 16, 17, is the second to last game of the season, and Bayern are currently 4-3 down against Leipzig. David Alaba scores a goal, it's 4-all, great, happy days. And in like the 94th minute or whatever it is, Iron Robin is running, despite the fact that he started this game, he is running as fast as he can past the Leipzig defence and doing this all on his own, because that's Iron Robin and that's what he does. And he scores. And you can see that even that game, like it's 5-4 against Leipzig in a match that really ultimately did not matter, and he still scores the winner. That's the sort of passion that you can see from a player that's from a country that for the most part really doesn't like German football. Like, I think that that connection to a team isn't something that can be bought, but it is something that you can cultivate. So if you look at something like a team like Atletico Madrid, they have players that are... Actually, that's probably not a good example. I think Roma is a good example for this. So a couple of years ago when they had Totti, you had the person that is Mr. Roma. And then below that, you had Daniele De Rossi. And then after that, Florenzi. But then there was nobody there that was really... that embodied the team, except for Rajan Yangalang, who is Belgian. He's got no connection to Rome at all, but you can just see something about him. He cared about that team so much. So it is possible to, again, to use that word, to outsource like this connection to the team. So it is doable in my eyes. I just think it's currently missing. But given this tweet that he said yesterday, maybe he's coming around on the team. Maybe he's starting to like us.
Yeah, and that's the point that I mostly wanted to bring up. It's maybe we're finally getting to see some of that out of Lewandowski, who's moved it and go through the summer. Maybe he's finally completely buying into Bayern and buying into Mia San Mia. But I hate to move away from the great Lewandowski debate, but you provided me the perfect segue, Tim, talking about Arjen Robben. Now, Tim, I know you're probably as big of a fan of Arjen Robben as I know. I want to ask you what you thought about his performance yesterday. He obviously got that early yellow card for diving, which I thought...
doing maybe, a Robin, I believe.
I thought the yellow card was harsh. He obviously dove, but there was some contact. Either way, he picked up his second later in the match for a pretty silly foul. Probably could be a little bit harsh on the ref, saying it kind of seemed like he had a vendetta against him. Either way, Robin got sent off. What did you think about his game?
He's another one that's kind of similar to Thiago and Lewandowski, where if something happened, he's more similar to Lewandowski. If Iron Robin is like really pumped up, he's going to do something outrageous and he's going to cut inside like 50 times, whatever. Yesterday, after he got booked for diving, which I don't think anybody can support that. Like it's something that he's cut out of his game quite significantly over the past couple of years. So to see it come back, you know, it's nostalgic, but why? There is no need for it. Because he still has that reputation. So if he goes down, there's always going to be like a dubious feel to it. But after he got booked and the crowd were booing him, you could kind of see something in him. And I was like, okay, he's gonna break out the big guns now, and he's gonna completely control this game. And then he got sent off, which just completely, it makes the diving so much more stupid. So I don't know if like he should have been booked for that. Probably, yeah, because he's trying to get a penalty and like massively sway the game. If he pretended to get fouled and like on the
if
halfway
you were
line,
a dove.
Yeah, if he was a dove, then on the halfway line, then maybe he wouldn't have got booked. But yeah, I think yesterday's performance was, it had the potential to be brilliant, and then it was really not good at all. But yeah, it's very annoying when you see one of the players that like you look up to that should be like the most passionate about the club, and to see him kind of like cheat is a bit, it's not great.
It's a bad habit, isn't it? I really don't like that he does it all the time. I think it really is a habit. I don't think he had any thought about it. I don't think he really thought about that at all. I think he just did it and then had to roll with it. And I think both situations were very dumb. But on the other hand, I don't think this foul should have gotten him a yellow card. I think that was too harsh. I mean, it was dumb. It really was dumb. But on the other hand, he could not have seen that this would give him a yellow card, I would argue.
Yeah, it shouldn't have resulted in a red card.
Yeah,
like if that was a yellow card, fine, whatever. But like considering he was already on a yellow card, that's, I don't know. Context is everything, and none of us are professional referees, so like, we don't. No, I don't think we are. Like,
no. I mean, it looked bad because the ball was relatively far away at the moment when he hit him.
Mm.
But it really looked like he wanted to go for the ball, and it wasn't outrageous in any kind of way, so I did not feel like this was a good yellow card. But yeah, I guess honestly, there are different opinions on that.
I was honestly ready to turn the game off until, and then that happened, and I was like, oh, okay, well, let's see what happens now. One arm tied behind our back. Let's see what we can do.
And that, in a way, makes yesterday's result actually a good performance, because they held on and they scored. They got the third after, I think.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, Wolfsburg scored, and then after that, James put his in. So yeah, I mean, it was great to see. You know, they were not content to just, you know, okay, we're down to 10 men. Let's just sit back and hold on for the victory here. They're still pressing forward, still looking for that two goal lead, and. Yeah, so that is a good point. I mean, in and of itself is encouraging.
Yeah, we saw after Robin got sent off, Kovac kind of switched to a 4-4-1, took out Serge Gnabry, brought in Leon Goretzka, kind of played him on the left, James on the right, and they were mostly playing through the middle, which is, I think, something that should excite a lot of Bayern fans. I know it excites me a lot because... if we're not going to bring in world-class wingers to replace Robbery, it's nice to see us give a little... Well, you know, our hand was forced with Robin being sent off, but it's nice to see us kind of employ another system, even if we are a man down, and to see that we didn't lose a step. We were still successful. And James, who is kind of playing as a right midfielder, coming inside more or less, got that last goal. So I thought that was nice to see. I thought... that Kovac should get some credit for that, for switching up the system after a man got sent off and still being successful. I know that will probably get overlooked. And we were playing Wolfsburg, who, you know, Robert Lewandowski always turns it up against them. But I just think that he should get a little bit of credit for that.
Yeah, I think his substitutions have kind of have been a bit suspect recently. He's not given Serge Gnabry. Is it Gnabry or Gnabry? I should really know these things. He's not given him 90 minutes yet, which is, it's a shame. But I think maybe yesterday would have been the match where he got 90 minutes. I think him bringing on Goretzka, somebody that has slightly more defensive oriented skill set. I think that made sense. Yeah, it shored up the midfield a little bit, and going to 4-4-1, I think it was the right decision. I think, Ben, as you said, switching to just playing through the middle, under the provision that Bayern aren't going to be getting new wingers anytime soon, with the exception of Alphonso Davies, I think that is really good. It's nice to see Bayern, or like somebody in charge, think, okay, let's try something new. It's refreshing.
I find it interesting that both of you seem to argue that we don't have the best wingers in the world anymore, so we need to play more through the middle. I would actually argue that we have guys who can play a really good game on the wing, but who are better suited to a more flexible kind of outlook, where they change positions from the outside to the inside and so on. I think that applies to Gnabry at least, and to Thomas Müller. Thomas Müller can play a very good winger, actually. He can play on the wing, but only in a more flexible kind of system, I would argue. So I would not really say that this comes down to our wingers not being as good as they used to be, I think. And by the way, Germans call him Gnabry, but I'm not saying that this is necessarily perfectly correct. I think his heritage is from a French language country, isn't it? I think it's from Côte d'Ivoire, Elfenbeinküste. What do you call it in English?
Ivory Coast,
isn't it? Yeah, I think he's from the Ivory Coast, where they speak French. So I would argue it's Gnabry, or even Gnabry, I guess. I don't know, but Germans call him Gnabry, so I can attest to that. Yeah, I mean, when I watched the German national team, I also liked how Gnabry played a lot, and I think I would like to see more of that at Bayern Munich, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, he can definitely play as a striker, and one thing that I would like to see is a pairing of him and Lewandowski. We saw a couple of glimpses of how well they could work together yesterday. I think it was one time Gnabry played a 1-2 with Lewandowski, and Lewandowski kind of chipped it over the defense. Gnabry's touch kind of took him off, took him to the goalkeeper, and he kind of, you know, blew his chance. But they were really working well together, I thought, when they were linking up. So I think it'd be nice to see them together. But to move on, final thoughts on yesterday's game, or Bayern in general. Do you guys think everything's back to normal, or did they convince you enough, or are you still waiting for just a little bit more from them?
I'm happy with the performance. I'm happy with the lineup that Kovac used. I hope to see that going forward, and that'll be good enough until Coman and Tolisso are ready to come back, and then we can talk about something else. Still looking for that back three at some point, but you know, this is if this is what we got to do with a back four, then I'm happy with that.
I guess it's fine for now. I mean, the real question is, how are we going to be really successful this season, or are we not? Are we actually looking to be better next season? Because I think that's what a lot of fans think about. They say, all right, let's see this season. It's fine if we just win the Bundesliga or get second place and so on. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's fine for now, but the real question is, is Kovac and the others, are they going to find a way to play really good football and to get far in the Champions League? And I'm not quite sure about that yet.
Tim?
Yeah, I'm confident that Bayern won't win the Champions League this year. I'm fine with that. I'd like to see a change, and I think this hinted at it. I don't want to say that everything's back to normal, because it's been one game. I think you need to give it like a couple of weeks of good performances. Obviously, we got the Champions League on Tuesday. I think it's going to be okay. This should hopefully put an end to all of the negativity that's being written. Maybe it might not. I don't know. I don't want to. Who knows?
I don't think our I don't think the board will allow it, the negativity to go away from the Bayern talk. Yes.
Okay, actually, Sebastian, since you are our resident German speaker, do you want to kind of give us, I guess, a translation of what exactly Uli Hoeneß and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge were saying on Friday in their press conference?
So, it's pretty interesting, I guess. I think the most interesting thing was when Uli Hoeneß, I think it was Uli Hoeneß, talked about the German Grundgesetz. So, you know what a Grundgesetz is?
Absolutely not.
It's basically the constitution, the German constitution. And the first article of the German constitution is Die Würde des Menschen ist unantastbar, which means, it's hard to translate, really. Basically,
the word of the people?
Excuse me?
Is it the word of the people?
Yeah, kind of. Human dignity is untouchable, basically. You're not allowed to infringe with it, basically. So I think that's the most interesting thing, because Germans make a huge deal out of this article number one, because it's quite special to the German constitution, and Germans take it relatively seriously. And yeah, I think it was quite interesting that he actually went there and went that far with it. It was a mess, I would say. What is also interesting, I think Hoeneß was not very convincing when they asked him, basically, okay, yeah, you talk about dignity and about doing the right thing and being fair, but you also were quite unfair to other people. They were referring when he called Bellarabi geisteskrank after that incident with this terrible foul recently. So geisteskrank, that's basically mentally ill, basically. That's what Hoeneß said, and so I guess they had a point there, I would argue. So yeah, not very convincing. I mean, Hoeneß and Rummenigge then argued that there's a huge difference between what you say right after a match and what a journalist says, who takes his time to write an article and is not as involved as the people from the club. So yeah, also kind of a point, I guess. Yeah. I don't really know what to make of that. I mean, I heard some people say that actually they did everything right, because they took the pressure off of their players and off of Kovac and put it all on themselves, because everybody was looking at Rummenigge and Hoeneß and was talking about them. But yeah, I cannot really get behind that so much.
Yeah, so yeah. Karl-Heinz Rummenigge and Uli Hoeneß, they kind of pulled a page out of our American book and condemned Bild and a couple other places for being fake news. Would probably be the easiest translation.
Interestingly, he didn't use that word, because we use that in German too. I mean, that's actually a thing in Germany since Trump, basically, that we also say fake news sometimes, really, without translating it. But he did not go there, at least.
Yeah, but you brought this up. There's kind of a few ways to look at it, and I mean, the majority of people are leaning definitely toward one, but some people are saying this was a genius move by Hoeneß and Rummenigge to come out and put up basically a smokescreen, and they really rally their players, say, you know, we're here for you. And I guess now they'll argue that it worked out because Bayern got the result against Wolfsburg. And then there's the other way of looking at it, which is basically just kind of looking at it for what it is. It's two grown men coming out and getting mad
at journalists.
It's
like the old people from The Muppets.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
screaming obscenities.
They're getting mad at the media for doing what the media has done for decades. And it just, it's not really, I guess from my perception, not really a good look for the club, especially for, you mentioned something that stood out the most for me, for Uli Hoeneß to come out and appeal to journalists for treating the players as people with, you know, dignity, respect, and 10 minutes later saying, oh, well, we sold Juan Bernat because he's a terrible player and almost cost us a single game against Sevilla in the Champions League.
Mm.
Or, you know, when the media brought up his comments about Pellerabi, he was basically like, no, I didn't use that harsh of language. I just said this instead. Not taking back really, you know, his comments or anything, just saying that they misquoted him, mm. more or less. And it's just, I don't know. I feel like the club maybe should, you know, especially them, should show a little bit more like self-awareness, I guess, or, you know, yep. I don't know, just not go out there and say anything. I mean, it's fine if you want to go out and say, you know, we support our players, we support our coach, but I don't know, the way they did it, it was just really off-putting for me.
Yeah, I mean, I could not have imagined that I would say this, but I kind of wish Matthias Sammer were back. I was never a huge fan of the guy, but I don't know, since Uli Hoeneß is back, I don't feel like he's quite the same he was before, and I've never been so enthusiastic about Karl-Heinz Rummenigge as basically alone at the top. So, yeah, I think maybe it would be great to have someone like Sammer back who really talks to the media sometimes in a kind of confrontative way even. Yeah, I think he did quite an all right job with that.
Yeah, you brought up Sammer, which Bayern does have a sporting director right now, Hasan Salihamidžić.
Yeah.
But if you look at the press conference, I think he spoke two sentences total. I think he actually had a question addressed to him that Hoeneß and mm-hmm. Rummenigge decided to answer. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think there's...
I think that says a lot about his responsibilities. Right. So I'm not sure anybody knows exactly what a sporting director is. Apparently, Salihamidžić is qualified to be one, so that's good.
It's another layer to a buffer, I guess, to make sure that, you know, the coach, you know, if you fire the coach and it's still bad, you can fire another guy before you start to have to look at, you know, what the board's doing.
It seems like a great job. I would really enjoy being a sporting director, I feel. It's just an empty paycheck.
Sebastian, to go back to you, how is the media in Germany, the ones who were so, I guess, lambasted, scolded, probably is the best way to say it, scolded by Hoeneß and Rummenigge, how are they reacting? I mean, are they taking this seriously, or basically the same thing you're worth saying?
Yeah, no. Yeah, they're reacting with a lot of ridicule, I must say. There was a very well-known press conference in 1997 in Germany when the, I don't know, probably not so well-known German pop group Tic-Tac-Toe split up. Probably you have never heard of that, I don't know. Maybe you heard? No, I don't think so. Maybe Tim, if anybody, maybe Tim.
I know,
but I guess
will
not.
Definitely know about them, so I'll be sure to bring that up.
So basically they compared it a lot to this press conference. They said it was the best or most ridiculous press conference since 1997 when this group split up. And that was really a childish kind of display back then in 1997. So I don't know, maybe there's an English translation of that on YouTube. I don't know. if it were, it would probably be worth looking it up. But yeah, I couldn't really find any outlet who was really positive about this. And that's why I don't think this was a good thing. And you pointed out the Salihamidžić issue here. Yeah, that was really strange. I mean, that they put this, they even had this kind of situation at the end. Then, I mean, that there was the whole discussion when they signed Hasan Salihamidžić to that job. They were talking about what's he going to be? Is he going to be kind of the what we call in German Frühstücksdirektor, which means the breakfast director, basically the guy who decides which kind of roles you're going to have for breakfast and stands and watches people having breakfast, basically. So I think that's what it turned out to be, I feel like. And that's not a good thing. I mean, I liked the idea of having Hasan Salihamidžić, actually, at the very beginning, because I thought, yeah, he knows the club. He knows Kovac very good, probably. Yeah, so far I cannot say that it worked out that well, I guess.
Well, I think that from my standpoint, it was watching all the quotes coming out of that and everything, it almost seemed so bizarre that it feels like it has to be 4D chess, so to speak, you know, where it's like there's something going on there. I like to think that they're somewhat intelligent people that know what they're doing from a business and a public relations standpoint. And it's just it's so, because there were so many blatantly hypocritical aspects to that, you'd like to think that they were aware enough to be able to say, okay, well, you know, this is definitely going to take the heat off of Kovac, people are not going to be asking questions about him. And so maybe they felt that coming out and just, I don't know, sharing ridiculous opinions. I don't know. The timing of it was kind of weird to me as well, given that, you know, you're coming out of an international break. Things have kind of cooled down a little bit just because of the time between the last match and now you're heading to a new one. And yeah, so to bring it up seemed bizarre. And I don't know, maybe they have medications that they're not taking or
I don't know if you guys knew that, by the way. But German media was kind of going crazy before the press conference actually took place, because everybody was kind of thinking Kovac would get fired. Mm. So they were thinking, is this about Kovac? Are they going to fire Kovac right now? So
that's not really something that's ever announced by a press conference. Like, you, because that's just horrible. Oh, by the way, you know, the guy that was out before him? Yeah, he's not coming back.
Yeah, that would have been especially weird with Kovac giving a one-hour presser right before that, and then they come out and they're like, just forget everything he said. But, I mean...
That guy, that's exactly why we're getting rid of him.
Yeah, exactly, everything he exactly. Said. I guess they saved a little bit of face.
Did you see the clip of him leaving the press conference just beforehand, saying, "I have fun"? Oh, that was great. He had such a big smile on his face.
Yeah, that was awesome. But I think they saved a little bit of face by getting the win against Wolfsburg. I think if they go out and, you know, just get battered by Wolfsburg or even lose narrowly, it probably would have been a lot worse. But hopefully if things go south again...
Yeah, well, on the other hand, if they had lost again, we'd be talking more about the crisis and not so much about the press conference, maybe.
True.
I think that, like you said, it does save face a little bit with the win, because now you can go and say, you know, we were in a little bit of a hard time, and you know, everybody's emotions were high. We were just, you know, we felt like we were being attacked, and so we felt like we needed to attack back, and like all these, you know, you can kind of say, yeah, I was stupid, but they won't ever do that. But I mean, you can kind of play it off because you won.
Hopefully, if things go south again, we can avoid this. Just hopefully
we'll just have another press conference.
No, that's what I'm saying. Hopefully, they'll just learn their lesson and not hold a press conference. But I have a feeling, knowing them, if things go south again, it'll just be worse next time. All right, so we'll move on to a new segment where hopefully we can do something like this every week. We'll debate a topic. And I don't know, I guess you guys, the listeners, can be the decider, see what you guys think, and you could probably, I guess, come up with an idea completely different than any of ours, and just let us know that, I guess, on Twitter. But this week we're going to talk about, or I guess answer the question, what is Bayern's best midfield? What's Bayern's best central midfield? And Sebastian, I want to go ahead and start with you, since I kind of know where you're coming from, and it's the midfield that we actually saw yesterday.
Yeah, that leaves me kind of with the boring answer here, because Kovac came up with the same thing I wanted to argue for. I think the best way Bayern can play in the central midfield is with Martinez on the number 6, basically, Thiago and James in front of him. That's the best thing they can do, and I would prefer it in a kind of asymmetrical kind of way. Martinez obviously is the best in the in a defensive role, and yeah, James and Thiago bring the most creativity we can have in a Bayern midfield, I would say. And yeah, Thiago obviously is better defensively than James is. And yeah, I think that's the best mix of stability and creativity we can have. I mean, we saw how that worked out with Thiago only as the DM. That didn't really go as we would have wanted it to go. So we also saw that James works the best in a central kind of role. I think there's no dissent among us four about this. Yeah, so the only thing we probably don't completely agree is I think maybe Javi Martinez. I think that's the most debatable kind of thing here. I think, as I said, he's the best defensively, so that's why I would like to see him on the field. Okay, so much for a start.
So I will. You brought up Javi Martinez at the end, and that leads in perfectly to what I would suggest. And if we're talking about Bayern's midfield, for the sake of this argument, we'll go with on current form and who they have available, which takes out the possibility of Corentin Tolisso, who I would definitely be starting. So for me, I would take out Javi Martinez and replace him with Renato Sanchez. And I would do that. I'd drop Thiago back a little bit. Renato Sanchez could kind of play a hybrid defensive mid box-to-box kind of role. Thiago would definitely be the one sitting in the hole playing those passes. And then James Rodriguez would take that attacking spot. And for me, Javi Martinez just, I don't think he contributes enough offensively, especially if we're talking about the big games, the Champions League matches, where you don't necessarily, have to have that someone sitting in front of the defense. It's a high pressure, but also, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a very important game where goals, they're more important, I guess I should say, that you really need more offensive capability, at least I would think. And I think Thiago can sit in that hole and play that defensive midfield role, making the same type of tackles, making the same type of interceptions as Javi Martinez, breaking up play just as well. And I think that's further highlighted when you couple him with Renato Sanchez, who's going to be working hard all game. He could possibly be replaced with Leon Goretzka, also in a box-to-box role. I just think Sanchez has been a little bit more impressive for me in midfield this season, especially getting the ball deep and driving play forward, storming through the midfield. He's nearly impossible to knock off the ball. And I just think what he can provide at both ends of the pitch is greater outweighs what Javi Martinez can provide only in a defensive role. And then, obviously, James Rodriguez, I think most of us would agree, has to be the number one attacking midfielder in the squad. I mean, he's too talented on the ball. As a creator, as a scorer, he just has to be in there for me.
So I guess I'll throw my hat in the ring here with a little bit of a different... I mean, other than James needing to be central and up a little bit more forward as a, kind of an attacking mid, I don't know, maybe this isn't my ideal. This is what I want to see. I want to see Serge Gnabry alongside James in kind of a I think it gives them a good amount of speed, dynamism, I guess is the word, just attacking threat through the middle that I think Bayern could really use. And I actually would like to see Leon Goretzka in kind of a more of a defensive midfield role. They've tried him everywhere on the pitch almost, other than maybe striker. I don't know that they've tried him there yet, but that could be coming. Just wait. But I think that what he's shown on the international level and what he has shown when he was with Schalke, I think that he could provide an option in, I don't know, I don't want to use any names that would make us make me get accused of blasphemy or anything, but I think that one of the players that we've really missed at Bayern since he left was Schweinsteiger, and I think that having a guy that could spray passes and also be that strong on the ball defensive midfielder is the type of player that Goretzka could and should turn into. That would be my ideal central midfield there, where you could kind of have all those three guys working together and just really have good link up from the back to the front, with especially like I said and you guys have mentioned as well, having James as one of the main drivers of the Bayern offensive push. So that's kind of where I'm at right now with my thinking, and I don't know if it's just because I've seen enough of Javi Martinez and I've seen enough of Thiago that I've gotten bored of them, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, if we're winning and I'm bored, then hey, I'll take it. But I if we're going to do this rotation thing and if we're going to, you know, experiment a little bit, I think that a midfield three of Goretzka, Gnabry and James would be ideal for me.
Okay, we can come back to that and pick that apart in a second. But first, Tim.
Yeah, I've been making some drawings. I think I'm onto something genius. Like, I don't want to be biased here, but I think I've
okay. The midfield one.
No, it's a midfield. In the back. Could that even work?
Neuer in the midfield.
3-1-3-3. It's kind of like Marcelo Bielsa, but
there you go.
So I've gone for a midfield four, having completely changed the system. I would set this up as a 4-2-2-2. Which has kind of like come back into fashion recently with teams like Leipzig, who don't have, well, Leipzig's first season where they didn't have out and out really, really pacey wingers. They just had people that were good at getting past their man. Simeone's Atletico Madrid kind of do something similar. So the back four, that's fine. That's Alaba, Hummels, whatever you want to call it. In front of them, I would have Thiago and Renato Sanchez. In front of that, drifting wide and centrally, I would have Tolisso and James. And then in front of that, Lewandowski and Gnabry, Coman, Müller, anybody that I think could do a good job as a secondary striker. I realised that Coman was actually sold by Juventus because he wasn't very good playing centrally, and that's what they needed him for. However, I think I'm onto something here. I've also got like another option of the same back four with Javi Martinez and Goretzka playing the two slightly more deeper defensive roles. Thiago in front of them, but drifting off slightly to the left. He's played left winger a couple of times for Bayern. And then on the right to balance off Javi Martinez's, I don't want to say lack of mobility, because he made like quite an interesting run yesterday. He was like trying to outpace many of the Wolfsburg defenders. Didn't really work out, but I admire him for trying. To balance his lack of mobility, I would have Kingsley Coman on the right, causing all kinds of damage. Whether that would ever work or not, I don't know.
And just a question, Tim, would Bayern in that instance play a very high press, high tempo game, similar to RB Leipzig, which, as far as I know, is about the only way you can effectively play the 4-2-2-2?
I'll be honest, I haven't thought that far ahead. I just want to get all of my favorite players involved.
For me, that's part of the question, actually.
That's
basically what it comes down between your approach and mine, Benjamin, I think. Because I would argue that what you're trying to play is the old Guardiola style. But I would like to see Bayern play the old Heinkes vintage kind of football. So basically not the last Heinkes term, but the one before. I would like to get back to that with Javi Martinez, on the as the DM. I would really like to see that kind of football again. This was not so much about possession, not so much about control. This was a faster kind of football. And I think, yeah, for that kind of football, where you don't control the ball 70% of the time, you really need more defensive power. So you really need to stop these inevitable attacks from the opposition.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you and I are lining up pretty well, just difference in the approach to the game. And I would absolutely have no problem with Javi Martinez being in, especially if you really want, let's say we have an aggregate lead and you want to hold that lead. I don't mind him sitting in there. My biggest problem with him, which is something Tim brought up, is his lack of mobility. I think he's just a bit, which it was really exposed when he played in central defense, but he's not the quickest. He's pretty slow.
Yeah.
And I don't know, he's a bit prone to some silly mistakes. And so when you're making mistakes and you don't have the speed to track back and correct them, I just don't think that's a good combo. But like you said, I think, which I am a Guardiola fan, don't hate me for that. I watch a little bit more Man City than I probably should, but I don't know. I think Tolisso would probably be the better option than Sanchez if he was fit. Obviously, he's not, and I think Sanchez is on too good a run of form. He's looking, you know, too confident right now to keep him out of our best starting 11, so to say. But I do think it's very interesting that Garrett is trying to put Serge Gnabry in his midfield. I don't think I've ever, other than when you brought it up, I don't think I've ever heard anyone suggest something like that. As far as I know, I've only ever seen him at striker, left wing, and then the occasional wing back under Nagelsmann last season. Mm-hmm. So what are you trying to get out of bringing him into a central midfield role?
So my idea is, so kind of going along with this, changing the style of play a little bit, I kind of like the idea of a counter press style of, you know, not sit back and hit them, but I suppose, I think it's called gegen pressing, and I think there's somebody who does that is in England now. But anyway, I think that I was thinking that Gnabry in a central midfield role that kind of pushes forward gives a lot of speed through the middle, where and like I said, he's kind of a dynamic player, whereas maybe a Thomas Müller isn't so much, and I like the idea of sticking Müller up top with Lewandowski, allowing Müller to kind of wamdoito around and do his thing, find the space and provide options all the way up top. And then also, you know, I think having that speed allows you to counter quickly. And I'm not fully convinced that the style of play that like a Thiago is built to play. That's not how he naturally plays, is fast and forward. He's more of a possession type guy, and I want to see us flying forward after we get the ball. And so I think I kind of thought Gnabry sitting back behind the front line with James, just they could do all sorts of overlaps and go on, you know, crazy runs and it's all through the middle. I guess that would be kind of what my thinking was on that. I think that it also has to do with the fact that I want Kimmich and Alaba up more in a wing back sort of midfieldish role anyway, because you know, this ideal 11, it's a back three for me. So I don't know, I just, like I said, trying to get, I want to get as much dynamic fast players in the middle of the pitch to allow the players on the outside to kind of be a little bit more free to just make some simple runs and go from there. And I think Gnabry and Hamez up front in that central midfield three does the job.
And who did you have in defensive midfield?
Goretzka.
Okay. All right. So, because I was going to say, if you want someone who's going to provide some dynamism, like you're saying from Gnabry, why wouldn't you want someone who's already used to playing in midfield, like Goretzka, taking that position? Yeah. But you could also, yeah. I would say, Sanchez there. I mean, it's an interesting idea, I think, that you're onto the three, if I'm hearing this right, a 3-1-4-2 with Müller, yep. Lewandowski up top, or Alaba, Kimmich wide. I mean, I think that could work. I think the formation especially could work, but I'm not sure I'd be comfortable, at least in our biggest games, putting Gnabry right. As part of a midfield trio. I think I'd prefer either Goretzka goes forward, Javi at DM, a defensive midfielder, or just go ahead and put Sanchez in, or Thiago in even, who I think is probably a little bit more dynamic and quick, or could be dynamic and quick in his play than you give him credit for. But, I mean, that idea is definitely something that I wouldn't mind at all Kovac trying, the formation at least.
Yeah, maybe against one of the, like the Nuremberg, try that there.
Right.
I think one of the most interesting, maybe not formations, but certainly lineups that Kovac has fielded this year has been against Augsburg, where he played Goretzka at left back. Because on paper, had I not seen that Goretzka was playing at left back, I would have assumed that that was three at the back. I've drawn it here of the back three of Hummels, Martinez, and Süle. The two in the middle of Goretzka and Sanchez, which I think of all of the players that Bayern have, including like Tolisso certainly in that group, but those two are the most adept at having a lot of space to run forward and having a lot of space to run back. Like I think they'd be fantastic in that situation. With Gnabry as a left wing back and Kimmich as a right wing back, and then a forward three of Müller, is it Wagner started that game, and Robin, whether they'd be like actual wingers or maybe just playing slightly behind. I think if that was the way that team was actually set out at the time, that would probably be one of the most interesting things to come from this season. But instead, no, it's Goretzka left back, so what's the point?
Yeah, so we talked about this last week. I think all four of us would be in agreement that it'd at least be, you know, nice to see Bayern try that three at the back, or see Kovac give that three at the back some sort of shot, but I don't know if we'll get that or not.
Still early.
Yeah, still is a little early.
I mean, Guardiola is like very fond of three at the back, and he didn't try it once in his first season at Bayern. Well, he did, but against Dortmund in the cup final. So I think it is just going to be a matter of like patience and, well, assuming that he's still the manager next season, of course.
I mean, with Guardiola, you never know. I mean, I think it's hard to predict what he's going to do. I'm not such a huge fan as Ben is, so.
Yeah.
I guess.
He's unpredictable, that is for sure. And I wasn't actually, during his time at Bayern, I wasn't, for the first year or two, not his biggest fan. At least the way that he tried to change the system so much at once. But I do think that the 2015-16 season, I think that's the best Bayern have played. I think, arguably, just based on play, when they were at their best, I think they could have beaten the Heinke side that won the treble. However, injuries really messed them up, and not performing in the big games, as opposed to the Heinke side, which could step up in the big games. And Heinke was obviously a little bit more adaptable in his play. So I'm not a Guardiola lover by any means, but I would definitely, I also think, you know, I'd probably more of a Jurgen Klopp guy, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I think I agree with Garrett that seeing a system like his at Bayern would be really nice. But I also think that he's probably the only guy who can fully implement that at Bayern.
So that's a good reason, I think, to not have your kind of midfield, because your midfield is a Guardiola midfield. I mean, we really need more of a more dynamic kind of approach. I still think that, if you want to call it a Heinke system or even a Van Gaal system, I'm not a huge Van Gaal fan because he's so fond of fixed positions, which I'm not. But yeah.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I think ultimately we could probably all agree, rather than seeing a Klopp midfield or a Heynckes or a Guardiola or a Van Gaal midfield, it'd be nice to see a Kovac midfield.
I want to know what that is.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of see, you know, get a system established, which is why we can have, you know, these debates, because there isn't a set midfield. Tim brought it up, you know, Kovac has fielded so many different starting 11s. And you talked about this last time, Sebastian. It'd just be nice to see a system developed of some sort, and, you know, have this debate of who the best three is, you know, have that kind of thrown out the window. And it's like, there's no debate because Kovac has made these three, this trio, or, you know, these four, these two, whatever it's going to be in his midfield. He's showing that these are the best for his system. And we're just not seeing that so far. Okay, so we saw this weekend that Borussia Dortmund continued their winning streak with a 4-0 win over, was it Stuttgart? Yeah, 4-0 win over Stuttgart. Yeah. With them picking up those points, Bayern picking up their 3 points too. Dortmund are still in first with 20 points total. Bayern did move up. We're in fourth place with 16, so we're only 4 points off, not too bad. Second and third is Gladbach and Werder Bremen, who's a bit of a surprise to be in there. Fifth, RB Leipzig. Sixth, Hertha Berlin. And seventh, Eintracht Frankfurt, which is actually where I want to start with Eintracht Frankfurt, because anyone who watches any Bundesliga would have seen Luka Jovic, I think. Anyways, however you pronounce it, he scored 5 goals over the weekend in one match. Not quite Robert Lewandowski, 5 goals in 9 minutes, but still, 5 goals. Most of which were pretty nice goals for Eintracht Frankfurt. Did any of you get to watch that match? I got to watch a little, but I actually missed most of the goals.
I saw the highlights of it. He's a player that I've very much enjoyed for the past year. So when the first rumours of Kovac coming to Bayern came about, I thought, okay, let's see what's going on with Frankfurt. And I remember before the cup final, when I was writing for Bavarian Tweets, I said two players that you should look out for, Ante Rebic and Luka Jovic. Rebic went on to score 2 goals and had a fairly decent World Cup, I think. But it's now nice to see Luka Jovic going, okay, 5 goals against Fortuna Dusseldorf. Okay, cool. But it's still 5 goals is 5 goals. Like,
right.
It can be against any opponent. Like, it's still impressive, I think, regardless of who it's against. And considering how young he is, I think he's only 20.
I really did not expect Eintracht to play such a good season, I must say. Not only this game, but they are at position number 7 right now. I really expected they were one of my first candidates to really play a worse season than they played the last time around, actually. I really thought they would fall apart with Kovac gone and the whole chaos with is Rebic leaving, is he not leaving, and all that. I really did not expect them to play as well as they do.
Because there were times last season where they did do very well, but then as soon as Kovac was announced that he was leaving, I think everybody just seemed to like not care that much. I know there are a number of people that were saying, like, after the Bayern-Frankfurt game in the league, where Bayern played a couple of young players, they were like, this is awful. Why do we have this manager coming along? But a few weeks earlier, it was actually, they were doing pretty well. Like, they defended very strongly. They attacked at pace. It's circumstantial.
And there are a team which is not used to playing in the EuroLeague, so usually that doesn't go well for German teams. I mean, all those German teams who are not every year, who don't play internationally every year, usually fare quite badly when they first play in the EuroLeague. This hasn't gone well for really any team in the last couple of years. So I really did not expect them to play as well.
Mm, yeah, Hoffenheim didn't adapt to it very well last year.
Or this year. I don't think they're not even here.
Oh, yeah.
Going back to Dortmund, they got another really big win over Stuttgart, who, like Dusseldorf, are really struggling this season, which, as an aside, that's really surprising to me. You're talking about Frankfurt surprising you positively. Yeah. Stuttgart are doing the opposite for me negatively.
Yeah.
But Dortmund went up 4-0. Jadon Sancho scored in the third minute, which was pretty impressive. Paco Alcacer got another in the 25th. They scored three goals before halftime. Marco Reus had scored another. Bless you. Marco Reus had scored another one those two. And then they capped it off in the 85th. Philippe scored, you know, the fourth to make it a pretty convincing win. Did anyone get to watch that one?
No, I missed it. I saw
only parts.
Because it was on at the same time as the Bayern game, so.
Right. So
I knew where my allegiances were.
Exactly. So one thing I want to bring up, which stats only tell so much in football, but if you look at expected goals, which these stats are coming from understat.com, first looking at the Bayern Munich-Wolfsburg game, Wolfsburg had an expected goals of 0.78, rounded up to 1. Bayern Munich had an expected goals of 2.76, so that rounds up to 3. We saw that was a really fair result. Now, if you go over and look at the Borussia Dortmund Stuttgart game, Borussia Dortmund, who scored 4 goals, had an expected goals of 0.94. Stuttgart, who scored 0 goals, had an expected goal of 1.10. So,
wow.
Basically, you know, if you read the stats, Stuttgart should have at least drew, possibly even won. You know, their expected goals was hardly even higher, but it was a little bit higher. And I guess it's just a matter of not finishing chances. So what I'm inferring from this basically is that Dortmund are going to come down to earth eventually. They can't keep, you can't score 4 goals from an expected 0.94 every single game. We talked about last week they're going behind. We're talking about them going behind early in so many matches and then just coming back, scoring all these late goals, really coming from behind. You can't. That's not sustainable. These type of results aren't sustainable week after week after week. So I guess if you look at the stats, there's a glimmer of hope for Bayern Munich, at least hope for Dortmund to fall off their perch. But yeah, that was my biggest takeaway when I read those stats. I was really intrigued by that.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to watch that more closely in the future if that trend continues. I mean, if they do that more often, as you say, this cannot be sustainable. But maybe it's an outlier this time. I really haven't watched that. But I think these new stats are really very interesting. And yeah, it's becoming more and more like it is in American football, I have to say. Very interesting.
Another game, or another, I guess, team that I want to talk about, not in the Bundesliga, but has some close ties with Bayern Munich in a few ways, is Real Madrid. Because we've had all this talk about Bayern Munich being in a crisis, but we saw this past weekend Real Madrid fell 2-1 to Levante. And if you've been keeping up with Real Madrid or La Liga, I think the one goal they scored in that game was their first goal, and I don't want to get this wrong, but I think it's about 10 hours of play. It was the first time
they've scored. 465 minutes, I think.
Yeah, I gotta try and find it. Is it like nine? It was somewhere around nine hours or so. It was the first time they scored. And I don't think the fans are at all happy with. It's kind of actually similar to Bayern. I think a lot of them are putting more blame on Florentino Perez and the Real Madrid board than they really are their new coach Lopetegui or the players, which obviously, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo just left.
I guess that puts our crisis into perspective a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's exactly why I brought it up. You know, it's just we think all this stuff's been going bad, but Real Madrid have make us look like we've got it good, especially finally picking up a win. I'm looking; they've lost 4 out of their last 5 matches, and one of them was a draw against Atletico Madrid. And they are 7th in La Liga. They're still only 4 points off Barcelona at the top. But, I mean, it's just really not looking good for them right now. So, yeah, like you said, brings up or puts our crisis, in quotation marks, kind of in perspective and kind of reaffirms the whole idea that when big clubs have small blips, it can really get blown out of proportion, or the media really attaches to that.
And then a number of media outlets are announcing that their manager, Lopetegui, I think, is likely to be fired by the end of today, which is kind of hilarious that you can go from winning the Champions League three times in a row to having a new manager. And because he hasn't won the Champions League three times in a row yet, you have to sack him. Like, this is something that I've kind of tried to get across a number of times on Reddit or on Twitter. In order for a club to grow, you if you're going from the very top, you can't always expect that level. You have to sometimes go back in order to grow again. It comes across as impatience, especially at Real Madrid when, okay, maybe not scoring in a number of hours is a bit of a problem. So I think it's 465 that I just saw. That is cause for concern, but maybe it is something that will get fixed. Immediately getting rid of the manager after a number of months does seem very short-sighted, but a Madrid in crisis is a good Madrid in my eyes.
Absolutely.
But I'm quite cynical like that.
There's a lot of pressure in Madrid also because their transfers haven't been as flashy as they used to be this season. I mean, there's no top star. You would have expected them kind of to buy really big names this year when they let Cristiano Ronaldo walk, basically, to plug that hole, kind of. But that didn't happen at all. I mean, their most expensive transfer was Vinicius Junior. I don't know quite how to pronounce those Brazilian names. They're always strange to me. Anyway, yeah, I think that's really interesting that they, didn't do a lot to convince people that Cristiano Ronaldo leaving is not such a big deal after all. And I think that doesn't make it easier for Lopetegui here.
And Vinicius Junior, or Junior, if we're going to call him that, I again don't know.
I guess it would be Junior or something if you actually possibly want to go Brazilian about it. But
yeah. Well, like, he was announced like what, 18 months ago, but obviously because he's so young, they couldn't bring him for all of the legalities. So he's not really the replacement for Ronaldo. Like, they didn't get somebody to replace him. Mm-hmm. They got Mariano Diaz from Lyon, who's a footballer. Like, he's fine. Like, he's a good footballer, and he'll do okay. But you're trying to replace somebody that is almost objectively the best player in your club's history, certainly in recent history. So not doing that is great news for me. I'm very happy that they've decided to not do that.
Yeah, that whole situation, the transfers, the lack of hype around these transfers, that hits a little too close to home. But that's that's enough about Real Madrid. Back to Bayern Munich, who they face AEK Athens Tuesday in the Champions League. Should be a pretty easy fixture. And then at the weekend, we have Mainz on Saturday. Anything you guys are looking forward to across those two games? Any key players from Mainz specifically? I'd be surprised if you even know a player from Athens, but any key player you think we should be on the lookout for, or what will you be watching for in these games?
All I know is I would like to see at least a 3-goal performance out of Bayern against Athens. I don't want to see another match where it's close against a team that it shouldn't be close against, and that to me is, let's progress out of this little slump that that Bayern's been in, and really start to look as though we're really moving forward and starting to become the type of club that Kovac is trying to get out of the current squad.
Yeah, I expect Kovac to rotate for Athens. Probably we'll see Sandro Wagner starting, and knowing that Sandro Wagner, Thomas Muller, I think would probably make a combo, either Muller from the right wing or right behind. I kind of expect Robin to take the right wing since he'll be missing next weekend. But it's a game away from home, so it's not. I don't guess it's like a given that Bayern should win, but I definitely agree that anything less than a 2-0 win or a really convincing 1-0, preferably a 3-0 win, Bayern need to go there and win big. But I'm more concerned, I guess, with the weekend game against Mainz, who just actually today lost to Gladbach 4-0. They started off pretty good. They were kind of hot at first, and they've kind of died off. They're in a bit of poor form. I think that this game is probably coming at just about a perfect time for Bayern Munich. Once again, they are traveling away, so that makes it a little bit more difficult. But this is a very winnable game for the Bavarians. So it'd be nice to see Kovac just field a strong starting 11, best players in his eyes, not in the media's eyes, not anyone else's eyes. You know, just go out there and, I don't know, put this whole talk of crisis to bed. Because even a convincing win against Athens isn't going to be, that's not going to cut it, I guess, for the media. But going to Mainz and getting a big, 3-0, 4-0 victory could probably put all these talks to bed. So that's what I'm hoping for and looking forward to.
I mean, Mainz has really not been looking so good. I mean, they have only scored 4 goals this season in the Bundesliga. That's really, really not such a great stat for them, I guess. And they have a couple of interesting players. I think Bamon is really an interesting guy, but also not playing very hot recently. So I think Bayern really needs to win both games, both upcoming games, convincingly. There's no way around it. If they lose any of those two games, we are right back in crisis mode.
Yeah, I think a loss could be detrimental, like hugely detrimental for Kovac and his future.
Yeah, I'd like to see a very convincing win, especially against Athens, because, okay, Ajax are most likely going to go through to the next round of the Champions League, so maybe the one all, I suppose you can call it a one-all defeat against Ajax the other week, it kind of makes it seem a little less dramatic, because quite frankly they do have a good team. But I think this is going to be a good opportunity for Bayern to say, okay, we're definitely going through. Two matches against Athens in a row, that on paper those are two very easy wins. And as somebody said, I can't remember, sorry, I was miles away, these matches have come at a very good time for Bayern. So with all due respect to the opponents, this should be, I don't want to say easy, but it should be not as difficult as Bayern could make it for themselves. I think that covers the base there.
Well, they have a chance to actually, too. I mean, these two matches, actually, I kind of lost my train of thought a little bit, but if you think about, so they, Mainz lost to Gladbach 4-0 today, and Gladbach look really good. I mean, yeah, they're playing Mainz, but they look really good, and so that loss doesn't look quite as bad. I mean, Bayern still should have gotten points out of that match, but that loss isn't looking as bad. The Ajax 1-1 loss is not looking so terrible, especially if you come in these next two matches and just blow the barn doors off of these two squads Now all of a sudden you can look back at that and say, oh yeah, well, we were probably overreacting. This, it was really just kind of the growing pains that we talked about last week. And it'll be really evident. But like you said, if there's a struggle, cause yeah, you can go and you can win 1-0 or 2-1 and you can look at it and say, well, we were unlucky on some chances that, you know, incredible goalkeeping or whatever. There's football is football, but you have to be convincing in these two matches against two teams that are not so good. if you want to actually leave this nonsense crisis talk in dust, it's gotta happen this week.
Yeah, so hopefully this time next week we're looking back at two big convincing wins from Bayern Munich. But that's all the time that we actually have for today. You can find us, the Super Bayern Podcast, on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, anywhere where you can find podcasts. If we're not on your favorite podcast listening app, then give us an email at superbayernpod@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at superbayernpod. Shoot us your questions, comments, any feedback. We'd love to have it. And we'll see you guys next time.